RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time for our Money Talks program this Thursday morning here at RCR, our regular Thursday feature. And we're welcoming a new guest on Money Talks this morning, Joel Robinson, a Wellington-based financial advisor specializing in investment, running his own financial advice business called Radical Investment at radicalinvestment.co.nz. Joel works with New Zealanders from around the country and loves working with people to understand their current circumstances before taking them in the financial direction they want to head in. Outside of work, Joel loves sport, having tried just about every sport, and travel, having covered every continent but for Antarctica. We'll let him off the hook for that. It's not easy to get to. 11 months ago, Joel became a father. He looks forward to living out his childhood sporting dreams through his son. Joel, welcome to RCR. First time around for Money Talks. Great to have you.
Thank you, Paul. Honored to be here.
Okay, well, good luck getting to Antarctica.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a bit of a way away to getting there. I've had family that's managed to visit Antarctica. Sounds fascinating,
same.
But yeah, don't know if I'll be getting there anytime soon.
You could impersonate a NIWA employee. Maybe that would give you a chance. They seem to do a lot of business down there.
Possibly, yep.
Yeah, or a penguin. Put on a penguin suit. Anyway, we're here to talk about KiwiSaver, but it gets the whole issue of retirement and savings for retirement sort of into some sort of focus now that you're here. And I hear all sorts of figures bandied around how much you should save, what buys you, you know, a good or whatever that is, good retirement. Yep. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is one that is constantly talked about, and I always hear it from clients when I'm chatting with them. Oh, you know, I've been told I need this much, or I need this much. For some people, it might be true, but really it depends. Yeah, so here's the politician's answer. It depends on what you want as a retirement, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're wanting to be out there and spending frivolously in retirement, you're probably going to need more than a million. But again, frivolously is going to depend on what that looks like to you. Massey University did a study actually a couple of years ago, which highlighted what the average people in retirement are actually spending. And it's probably a little bit less than people actually think. To have a choices lifestyle, what they call a choices lifestyle, most people kind of require around $70,000 a year in order to have that. Now, obviously, Super, NZ Super we have, and that is for a couple contributing roughly half of that. So that means the other half has to be made up from, could be KiwiSaver, could be investment property, it could be an investment portfolio, could be dad's stamp collection.
Yeah.
Any other valuable
good luck with that, yeah. He's saying, where's my stamp collection? Oh, dear, he's noticed.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure what people are paying for those these days. I think the sort of peak of stamp collecting is past. But yeah,
I used to do that, actually.
Likewise. Yep.
Yeah.
Likewise, it was very topical thing in my family. Both sides of my family big into stamps. I inherited a few of them. But
I always remember people talking about the penny black.
Uh huh. Yep.
That was the most expensive stamp or rarest stamp in the world, wasn't it? At the time.
And then I remember there being someone from somewhere in the Caribbean that only one of, I think, existed, and it was sold at auction for some, I don't know, when I was probably 10 years old, it seemed like an enormous amount of money. I guess some of the sums we talk about these days, maybe it wasn't.
Emails decimated that stamp collecting thing now, probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so there's always that. Mm. People, of course, sell down their houses too, don't they, usually around that time? And for the boomers, probably that's a big contributor.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a client that I've been working with where, and it's quite common around New Zealand, especially for people that live in parts of New Zealand where housing is more expensive. We're very asset rich, but cash flow poor. And one of the options that's often suggested is, you know, the reverse mortgage thing, which personally I hate. It can, if you're not really careful around it, it can spiral away a lot, and you end up people can end up effectively trapped in their own house. That's another topic we could really go down that rabbit hole. But
as I understand it, reverse mortgages is you you don't actually have to pay that back, and that is cashed up at what, the end of your life, really? Is that how that works?
Or on sale of property, which is on why sale, people yeah. can end up, because you can, yeah, you can get to a point where people are actually unable to sell because of the impact of the realizing of that mortgage, that debt that's effectively been building up to the bank. So, yeah, so, but the other avenue is, yeah, I mean, people that have a lot of value in the home, they sell down the home, downsize into something else, and that releases some money to use. Because as the old saying goes, you can't eat your floorboards. You can't carve off, you know, one square meter of your front section and sell that off in order to raise some money. It's kind of all or nothing.
Yeah, though with CBDC and tokenizing all your assets, that might be possible in the future.
Who knows? Yep. Could well be. Could well be.
All right. I remember also, because I'm old enough, that when Muldoon came in, he scrapped the Labor government, I think it was under Norman Kirk. They were just about to, or may have just implemented a, you know, national savings plan that Australia did.
Yep.
And Australia now have in that account, it's probably more than one account, some incredible, humongous amount.
Yes.
And I think other countries, I'm thinking of Norway, who have invested their fossil fuel income over all this time. You know, each citizen is like worth a couple of million dollars now from that. Boy, we should have done that. Do you think?
Yeah. These sorts of things are very easy in hindsight. You know, it's easy to make the best decision in hindsight. How often do you sit there and think, oh man, I wish I'd placed a bet on that that underdog to win? But yeah, no, it is a big shame. There has been various different economic analysis that is done on what the financial impact to New Zealand would have been had we actually done that. And sadly, it's probably not worth reading into that for getting too depressed.
Because we'll be coming up 50 years now, Joel, on that. If we've done that.
In Aussie Super, the average balance sits around the couple of hundred K mark.
Yeah, per citizen.
Per person, yeah. And that's about six, just over six times what each person on average has in KiwiSaver. So,
only
a small difference.
Just a little. But we did it in the end, and that was, I think, Michael Cullen instigated that. So how do you think that scheme, and we're getting on to what the Retirement Commission is saying about this in just a moment, but how do you think that scheme has gone in that time?
Probably about as well as could be expected. It's never going to be something that you get perfect right off the bat, and people have to get familiar with it. You know, people are never going to be fully on board, up and running immediately, you know, with a new scheme, especially when, you know, what occurred in the past occurred when, you know, it was scrapped sort of in its infancy. For a lot of people, when they first saw KiwiSaver, they kind of suspected the same thing was going to happen. And so that definitely affected uptake initially. But yeah, overall, there's been plenty of good initiatives to encourage uptake of it. And it's certainly not perfect. I don't think there's anyone involved with KiwiSaver in any shape or form that thinks it's perfect, but overall it's functioning pretty well. But yeah, definitely some things that can be improved.
It's not compulsory. I think the Retirement Commissioner describes it as soft compulsion.
So they, in the Retirement Commission's report, they highlight there's essentially three different types of tiers of retirement savings. You've got tier one, which is basically government provided, so that's actually what NZ Super is classed as. You've got tier two, which is a compulsory savings scheme, which is what a lot of countries around the world have. And then you've got tier three, which is what KiwiSaver is considered to be, which is where it's soft compulsion in terms of you're automatically enrolled into it, but you can opt out. So there's no legal requirement for every single person to be involved in it. And what the Retirement Commission highlighted was that, they don't believe that there's a need to make it compulsory. And I think that's a good thing, because realistically, most New Zealand's actually already enrolled in KiwiSaver. About of those that are further in the 18 to 65 category, which is kind of your real target currently for KiwiSaver, you know, most of them are enrolled, and those that aren't, pretty much it's because they can't afford to be, because, you know, they're living dollar to dollar. And so if you were to make it compulsory for those people, then you potentially actually have some worse outcomes now, because obviously people won't be in that necessarily living dollar, you know, dollar to dollar for the entirety of their lives. And so by, you know, enabling them to not be forced into it, they can ensure they're not going into debt essentially to fund retirement savings, which is not an outcome you really want to see. So there's not really much to be gained by making it compulsory. And I think in some ways it probably would also just not do much for people's trust in KiwiSaver and government to make it compulsory when there kind of isn't really, you know, a need to. And that's essentially, and the Retirement Commission didn't put it quite like that, but their perspective was, you know, they don't really think it's needing to be compulsory because there's enough incentive for people to be involved that want to.
In terms of contributions to KiwiSaver, what is the average percentage-wise?
Yeah, so if you were to add the employer and employee contributions together, it's about 7%, because your default, your minimum is 3% as an employee and 3% as an employer. There's a few people, well, more than a few, doing 4%. Some, I think the number was something like 1 in 6. I could have that wrong. The number was in that report. Something like 1 in 6 people have an employer that is contributing up to 4% if they contribute 4%. So then there are some employers doing more than the minimum. But then there's also quite a few people contributing 6 or 8 or 10% of their salary to it. And so that's bringing that average up to about 7%. Aussie sits at somewhere around the 11% mark of total.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so that's also quite a big reason for the higher balances there, because you can imagine over time that compounds and compounds on the compounding. Whereas, yeah, we're still low figures here. But what the Retirement Commission highlighted is KiwiSaver, and this is an interesting one because it's a conversation I have a lot with a lot of clients, is, you know, will NZ Super be there when I get there, especially if they're, you know, in their 30s or even in their 40s.
That's a fair enough question.
Yeah, it is a fair enough question. Absolutely. And I encourage people to not rely on it, because if financially you get 65 and you're not actually needing to rely on it, then that's great. But yeah, it's reality is a lot of people are going to need it. But the Retirement Commission's report continued to reiterate the necessity of keeping NZ Super, and there wasn't any wording in there whatsoever, in fact, the opposite, to suggest that, you know, NZ Super become means tested or the age change. So that's interesting. And they did also recommend that if NZ Super was to change, that actually KiwiSaver, the withdrawal age, be decoupled. So kind of initially it was like age 65, withdraw from KiwiSaver and you're getting your super, kind of, you know, nice all in one. But if it was, if the super age was to change and, you know, become 67 or 70, then they actually recommend that people don't, or that the changes to KiwiSaver aren't made to make withdrawal from KiwiSaver that age, but to keep it at 65.
That's curious, isn't it? What do we read into that, do you think?
Hard to tell, to be honest. I think...
Well, it anticipates there will be an age change. There probably will be at some point, right?
Well, anticipates it's possible. I guess they're trying to make recommendations that are as forward-looking as possible when there's elements being reported on in there that you know, the writer of the report doesn't have control over, I guess. So that's the difficulty of these things. You know, you get a report written from one person's perspective, but, you know, there's other factors at play there that they don't actually have control over. So it will be interesting to see how it changes.
Mm. KiwiSaver will have to keep pace with social changes too, that maybe some we haven't even anticipated yet.
Yeah.
Do they talk about any scenarios around that?
Yeah, so there's a lot of talk around in their average balances and comparing balance for men versus women and different ethnic groups. Most of the recommendations were around things like ensuring that when people are on maternity leave, when women are on maternity leave, and that the employer can still contribute into KiwiSaver even if they're not, which is I think a nice addition. And does help with that fact. But as for expected societal change, there's, you know, somewhat little in there about other anticipated changes.
Yeah, I mean, what could they be? We probably can't even think of them right now, but things do change.
They did also make a recommendation that, which will be interesting depending on what happens with immigration, but that those coming in on a work visa actually be able to join KiwiSaver, because currently in order to join you have to be a resident of New Zealand or able to reside here permanently.
And, okay, that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
What are your feelings about that? Do you have any, you agnostic or do you have feelings about that?
Somewhat agnostic. I think it's good for those that are coming to New Zealand with the intention of staying. Because if someone's coming here, they're coming on a work visa, and you know they've shifted their whole family, they moved their whole life to New Zealand, you know, they're pretty unlikely to leave again. And as long as they understand the rules around KiwiSaver and how it's set up, I think it's good. I've definitely had a few conversations in the past with people here on a work visa that intend to be here long term, and so I think it's a good option for them to be able to enroll in early. But I don't think it's going to be, you know, like an earth-shattering change for KiwiSaver overall or for
people. Yeah. Though the migration numbers are quite large at the moment as a proportion to the population.
Mm. Yeah, so for those coming to New Zealand, it could be an attractive proposition to be able to jump on board with KiwiSaver early doors. Because, yeah, I mean, you know, a few years of missed contributions from your employer does make quite an impact. Might it have an impact on those that are employing people coming into the country? Possibly. I guess you could make the argument for someone hiring a seasonal worker, it's attractive to have someone that's coming from overseas when there's not that obligation to, you know, pay to essentially match salary into KiwiSaver. So it makes a migrant worker that little bit cheaper. But I haven't really had any conversations with employers where that's a factor. So I'd just be making an absolute guess.
An absolute guess. Well, people make plenty of absolute guesses these days. What about accessing money before retirement? Because we're in a kind of economic squeeze at the moment. Do you agree with that?
That we're in a squeeze?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I see it plenty. I've got quite a few clients because I'm based in Wellington, similar to yourself, as I understand.
Well, I've just moved from Wellington only a week ago, so just bailed out, sorry.
Oh, you've left some of us unfortunate ones behind.
Yeah, I hope they fix the pipes is all I can say.
I have a lot of clients based here in Wellington that were working public sector, and with a lot of the redundancies that have occurred, absolutely, you know, that's put a real squeeze on single income households hugely, even for two-person, two-income owner households, it's still quite an impact as well.
How are you finding that? Because I've been thinking about, you know, what has, particularly in Wellington, what sort of impact that's been having on people. And I thought, well, if I was in that situation, it would be very insecure feeling. Mm. It would be a tough, stressful time. Is that what you're seeing?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there's. I'd be interested to hear how some other financial advisors in other parts of the country are seeing it with, people in Auckland or Christchurch or Dunedin, but I haven't seen it to quite the same extent from the clients that I do have in those parts of the country compared to Wellington. And for the people based in Wellington where they are out of work, I've heard numerous occasions of people applying for work which was at or below their level and having 300 applications to contend with numerous times. At various levels of various skill levels. And so for all these people, you can only really, you know, stay personally afloat financially for a few months.
Yeah, for so long.
For so long before you have to do something about it. And for a lot of these people, I think that's meaning shift across the ditch. I've definitely had that conversation.
Okay, yeah. And that costs too.
It definitely does. Yep.
So that is one option to access KiwiSaver under sort of like a hardship, under hardship.
Yeah. So the criteria for hardship withdrawal is quite strict, and it's not set by your KiwiSaver provider. It's set by the overseer of the scheme. So that's a company that's independent of your KiwiSaver scheme. And because that's something that people kind of trip up on a bit. They think that it's up to their advisor or their provider's discretion, but it's not. So there's quite a huge amount of evidence that you need to supply in order to be eligible for withdrawal. And it's quite invasive, to be honest. But
well, they drill down on everything.
Yep. Yep. Then they want to basically see that it's genuine hardship, that people genuinely are struggling to pay the bills, basically. And they will usually only allow you to withdraw enough to cover the bills for a certain period of time. So it's rare that it would be the full balance of your KiwiSaver, unless the full balance of your KiwiSaver was that amount, basically, for covering the bills. So hardship withdrawals have gone up significantly this year, much higher than in past years. And that's really a reflection. That's a true reflection of, you know, how people are doing.
Do you think the state of the economy is, I mean, people are aware that it's tight, but is it being reported to the level of tightness that it actually is? Just curious to hear your view on that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's perhaps not in the Wellington region as much as it is, just from the conversations I've had with other business owners, with clients that are that have been made redundant from work and from good paying work. I suspect that in other parts of the country, it's not quite as bad has been here. I think it's just because of the impact of government employment on Wellington and the Wellington economy. But I think that the proof will be in the pudding over the next few months, really. Property prices have been under pressure. Lots of properties up for sale. Plenty in the Wellington region. Real estate agents have talked to, they've said, you know, we're at higher numbers of stock on the market that we've ever had. So, you know, all of that doesn't exactly paint a rosy picture of how things are economically in the area at the moment. But I'm aware that's not actually been the case ever in the country. So, yeah, it's going to be quite interesting between now and the end of the year, you know, what sort of impact that has.
Yeah, well, I've just moved to the south. I'm down in the Queenstown Lakes area, and I know a few people around here. And trade is down. You know, it is. It is, particularly in the tourist and hospo sector, it's down.
Yeah.
So, but Wellington's completely different dynamic. I get that. You could always take a picture of yourself in a doorway in Courtney Place and send it to the overseer and say, "Here's my hardship," because there's a lot more of them too. I noticed before I left. All right. So this scheme, it's kind of delivered what it promised to this point. Do you think? Is that your assessment?
Yeah, so far, there's definitely some innovation I think that can be brought. That was one of the things I was a little bit disappointed with the report on. It was kind of bereft of anything that creative or that visionary. It was small changes, which are great and needed and useful, but I don't think it really. It was a lot of looking and comparing to what's going on overseas, and not a lot of where can we be sort of.
When you say innovation, give us some of your thoughts on that. Okay, let's say you had the levers of KiwiSaver and they said, "Hey, Joel, come up with some creative ideas to make this better." Yep. What would they be?
Yeah, so I think two things in particular. One, we're very aware of there being some huge infrastructure, deficits that New Zealand has. I think there's a real opportunity for basically KiwiSaver members to essentially own New Zealand infrastructure. Because I think there's a really logical connection there. People in KiwiSaver are Kiwis. And, you know, so you can't have someone that's, you know, not a New Zealander living in the States owning, you know, being involved in KiwiSaver.
Like so BlackRock.
they could kind of, in effect, have investment here through a KiwiSaver scheme. But if it's the KiwiSaver scheme themselves, because BlackRock aren't a KiwiSaver scheme, or they don't currently offer one. But you know, if you had a KiwiSaver scheme here, that is essentially enabling their members to own directly. It could be, I don't know, a toll road, just to pick a really boring one that people hate out of the air.
Yeah,
you know, that could be owned and paid for by KiwiSaver members, who then receive that benefit from that, basically.
Because that would go back into ultimately accounts, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, all of the income that toll generates essentially then goes back to those members. And I think, you know, it's provides a real opportunity for connection between New Zealanders and New Zealand. I think there's opportunities there without, you know, the government needing to go, let's just borrow lots more money to do these projects. When you have a KiwiSaver scheme involved, they're going to want to see a return, because if their members are making a return, their members are more likely to stay, they're more likely to attract new members. So they're heavily incentivized to try and find the best return for members. So I think that should really be explored. Nicola Willis attended her Incarpity business breakfast that she spoke at there. And yeah, there kind of was potentially some hints at that, I thought. So I think that's an option. But the other thing, and this is perhaps a longer conversation that we don't have time for today, but there's a real gap between companies that are just getting started, you know, getting seed funding to start, versus listing on a stock exchange.
Yep.
There's a massive, massive gap in between there. And New Zealand has traditionally not done a great job filling that gap, mostly because there's not enough investors out there that have the time frame and the stomach for the risk and the money required. Whereas KiwiSaver, we've got about $110 billion in there now. There's definitely some capacity for that. There are a lot of people in KiwiSaver that have bought the first home and have at least 15 years until they can access it. You know, that's people that have the time frame and have, in combined amounts, the capital that could fill that gap. So I think that there's a wonderful opportunity and potential there. Because in KiwiSaver, it was about 8% of all KiwiSaver money is invested in New Zealand.
Say that again.
So it's about 8% of all KiwiSaver money that's invested in New Zealand equities, so like property and shares. And so there's definitely capacity, you know, to increase that, even if it's only a few percent. That's a few billion dollars that could be, you know, channeled towards smaller companies that are needing that next stage of funding to kind of develop. So there's still, you know, a lack of innovation there, and it's those companies that go off to Australia or to the US to go to the next leg, because there's more people there with the money to provide that, you know.
I think essentially what you're saying, Joel, is we've got to back ourselves, right? Really, yeah. If we're serious about us.
Yeah, and I think it doesn't have to be backing ourselves to the degree of 100% of everything people contribute into KiwiSaver goes into speculative, you know, new businesses. There is quite a very reasonable middle ground, or even a very conservative ground, of what if it was only 1%? That's a starting point.
Yeah. Interesting conversation, Joel. And if people are interested in finding out more, the Retirement Commissioner calling for changes to KiwiSaver, it's on their website. And all the points, I mean, we've just skirted around because of time.
Yep.
But all the points are there. I suppose they are interested in hearing from people. I'm not seeing anything specifically asking for any sort of feedback. So I guess if you've got an idea, you can.
I'm sure they'd be happy to receive a creative email.
Yeah. And just for you as an advisor in these current conditions in Wellington, we get it about Wellington. Is that more challenging for you? I suppose you really have to be. You have to be creative in these times, right?
Yeah, it probably changes the nature of the advice for people. I've been doing a lot of KiwiSaver-specific advice recently around the country. But yeah, definitely there's less people planning for the holidays and more,
yes.
How do we make sure we've got enough?
Yeah, no, I get it. Okay, Joel Robinson, Financial Advisor, Director of Radical Investment. Nice to have you on, Joel. We'll have you on again, all right?
Be happy to. Thanks, Paul.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.